We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, it's a competition, and we'll continue to look, whether that's cap casualties, free agencies, if there's a player in the draft. It'll be competition. We're not going to, you know, state now or probably next month or in 2 months, this person's the starter. They're all going to get a chance to compete, and best man wins.
Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean on the middle linebacker situation. Maybe an area the Bills will target this upcoming draft with the loss of Tremaine Edmonds. He seemed to indicate last week when he met with us in the media that that competition is going to come internally. But obviously you do have still free agency that goes on and you still have the draft. And to talk to us about the draft is our guy Eric Galco. He is the director of football ops and player personnel with the Shrine Bowl, also a member of Optimum Scouting. Eric, it's Sal and Joe here in Buffalo. Welcome back to WGR.
What's going on, guys? How are we doing today?
Pretty good. We're just trying to figure out what the Bills are going to do at wide receiver, middle linebacker, for a team that, you know, is, you know, in a Super Bowl window. They do have some areas they need to address. So let's start with that and maybe what could happen in the draft. I think we've been on the wide receiver train here for quite a while, Eric, and how they can add to this core. And they can still do some things in free agency. But what if they go that route as far as the draft is concerned and get one of these guys to come in and maybe pick number 27 or the second round? Like, where would you see a fit? Who might be there? What could the Bills possibly land around there?
Yeah, I think at that point, barring a trade up, which I'll expect them not to do at this point, it's likely going to be guys like Zay Flowers, Jackson Smith-Njigba, and I think Jalin Hyatt will be gone by about the late teens to early 20s. And I think after that's going to be a Jordan Addison, Quentin Smith type fit. And I think depending on what they want to add, if they want to add more kind of Gabe Davis protection and go the Quentin Johnson route, that's intriguing. The more the traditional slot guy to kind of be the underneath player, though I know they have some players internally that can kind of fill that role as well. But I think those are the two guys you're looking for if you want to stay at pick 26 and get a receiver. Because like I said, Zay, Jackson Smith-Njigba, and I think Jalin Hyatt will all be gone by that point.
I saw you tweet about this the other day. There's a potential, though, because of the teams right in front there. Could there be a run right before the Bills get on the clock if they're thinking receiver?
Yeah, I think there'll be at least two and probably three gone before the 20 start. And I think all those teams needing receivers kind of shows that, hey, even the team like the Baltimore Ravens at 23, I think if they want one of these top receivers and their GM has kind of insinuated that maybe receivers and they want to add to in the draft if they're not doing so in free agency, they have to move up in the draft to get that. So, again, I feel confident in saying that, hey, I think there'll be two, probably three gone before the 20 start. So unless Buffalo wants to move up, you're looking at guys like Quentin Johnson, who teams kind of have varying degrees of grades on across the league. I think he's not – I don't think he'll be the first receiver taken. I think he's more likely to be the fourth, the fifth, than the first. And then guys like Jordan Addison, who are kind of specific, maybe slot-only type of players for most NFL teams based on his speed and his play style.
Go ahead,
Joe. And at that position, like, where do you see a drop-off? Because last year it was seen as a deep pool – and the Bills were up in round two, and maybe they wouldn't have taken one anyway, but by the time they got up in round two, the run had happened. Like, Sky Moore was gone, even Tyquan Thornton, like, all of those second-round receivers had already been picked, and they decided to move down. So I guess, like, if they decided, we'll pass on this player here and hope to get one in round two, like, what do you think their chances would be of getting someone that's worth the pick at receiver if they decided, yeah, this class is deep enough, let's see if we can wait?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think we've been spoiled the last 4 or 5 years of unbelievable receiver talent that this year being still a pretty good, pretty deep class has looked at like one of the worst classes in the last 5 years. I mean, there's still a lot of talent that back end of round two. Guys like Jaden Reed are going to be available for them to consider in that late round two, where he could be kind of a plug and play NFL starter. And then round three, if they want to go later on as well, too, guys like Michael Jefferson, DeMario Douglas, guys in that round three, round four area. So I think there's a lot of depth kind of picking up right with the Bills picking that late round two after the run on. I think round two is going to be a lot of DBs. It's a very strong class there. A good number of linebackers with maybe only one going in round one, a good number of tight ends. I think they'll push receivers down to that late round two, early round three area, which is kind of where the Bills would love to maybe get a receiver in that second, third round area. So the depth's going to pick up at receiver, I think, right where the Bills are picking in round two, well into the early fourth round.
You know, going back to last offseason, the way I've tried to explain it is it seems like Ken Dorsey wants to build this offense that has pass catchers. Let's strip the labels of wide receiver, running back, tight end. They go out, they try to sign J.D. McKissic, and obviously they agreed that he goes back to Washington, and so then they draft James Cook. They brought in O.J. Howard. That didn't work out. They're trying to create this offense where they can really kind of dictate some matchups. So that leads me to tight end. I think tight end might be really in play for the Bills at the end of round one here because this is a good class at the top. What do you see from that group? What could help the Bills? They do have Dawson Knox, but what could we see from that group going forward, and where's the value lie?
Yeah, it feels like the only guy that may go in round one, I guess one of three guys may go in round one, and that's Luke Musgrave, Michael Mayer, Darnell Washington, a chance Dalton Kincaid does as well from Utah. So I think one of those four guys should be available. I think of all the fits there, Darnell Washington's pretty special athletically and pretty naturally talented, and I think his upside has really got a lot of teams excited. It feels like he has a decent chance to be the first tight end drafted now, despite maybe being the one that has the least immediate projected role. So it feels like he's going to be the guy maybe gone by the time the Bills pick, but in that certain range for sure. But then between Mayer, Musgrave, and Kincaid, it's kind of pick the guy kind of you want there too. And then in round two, I think the depth of this class really picks up, I think, in the kind of round two, round three are with guys like Luke Schoonmaker and Sam Laporta. Schoonmaker more of the complete tight end, good athlete. Laporta more of the seam stretching guy, could be a great complimentary piece. Brendan Strange, Zach Kuntz, et cetera. So I think if the Bills want to go tight end in round one, they could get the first or second best in the class. But I think that round two, round three area, you're going to get a lot of guys that can play a role right away alongside Dawson Knox.
Eric Elko on the Westher Hotline. All right, the danger in tight end, though, right? We hear it all the time. That position takes a little longer to develop. Here's this team in this Super Bowl window. Is that too risky for a team like the Bills, Eric?
I think a guy like Luke Musgrave, who can be a plug-and-play receiving weapon, although maybe he kind of is duplicitous with Dawson Knox. Michael Mayer is a guy who's a capable blocker, a strong blocker, could be a really good short area guy, a lot of Kyle Rudolph comparisons as a guy also from Notre Dame. And then I think you got like Luke Schoonmaker, who's been a little bit underappreciated because he got hurt in the playoff game for Michigan and kind of had a draft process people forgot about, but he's a plug and play NFL tight end tomorrow. I think those are the three guys that if you want to win now tight end to play right away, I think all three of those guys can be upsized to be your top tight end, but can be immediately complementary pieces in round one, round two.
When it comes to the Bills' needs, I know receiver is the hot idea for fans, but the defensive side of the football, I mean, middle linebacker is their biggest need. I heard you mentioned about like maybe one in the first round. If they're going for need, how does that linebacker position shape up, and where do you think would be the best time to target it?
Yeah, I think it might be round one for the case in point that I think a lot of teams in the league quietly really need linebacker help, and we've seen a couple teams kind of turn over their linebacker room, letting go of some more experienced veteran 30-plus-year-old linebackers across the league. I think teams want to get younger, but in a weird way, every team wants to get younger, and we've had a couple lackluster linebacker classes, especially in depth, the last few years. So I think linebackers are going to see a lot more players drafted, a lot more players drafted early than people are going to expect, especially on day two of the draft, because I think a lot of teams – kind of want to address that position early. It's a position that historically, based off of analytics, is a very safe pick in the first two, three rounds. Those guys tend to last their whole rookie contract. They play quite a bit. They can play special teams, all those great things. So I think we'll see a run in round two, round three, and 26 of the Bills might be where the first linebacker is taken. So they like a guy like Jack Campbell, who I think is a plug-and-play NFL linebacker for a decade. They've got Noah Sewell, some teams like from Oregon. A lot of great talent at linebacker across board. Trenton Simpson, who's kind of a linebacker safety hybrid. A lot of great options there for the Bills at 26. And if they want to kind of get ahead of the curve in the rest of the NFL looking at linebackers, I think the first round pick may be their best option to do so.
All right, so I'm caught between what they want to do there because you have Tremaine Edmonds, who's a freak of an athlete, right? We all know that at his size and his ranginess. But They have Matt Milano. And look, Eric, the way I've described it is maybe they want more of a downhill guy next to Matt Milano. They both had him and Tremaine for 5 years together, have the same kind of skill set of sideline to sideline, super athletic. But I think it has hurt them in the run game a little bit at times. So can you break down those linebackers? And hey, if you're looking for more of the sideline to sideline athletic middle linebacker, where you go? And if you're looking for more of the downhill plugger against the run, where you go?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good athletic linebackers. Marion Overshone is a guy that has a ton of range, a ton of lateral ability, and a great athlete. Deion Henley is a guy who's a former quarterback turned receiver, turned safety, turned linebacker. He's super fun to kind of play in a lot of different spots, and especially playing the perimeter there as well. But Owen Papau from Auburn as well, another freaky athlete, but a guy I'm not sure is going to be that downhill run guy you're looking for. But I would say the three guys that I think teams feel most comfortable with as being great run-defending linebackers in the first two, three rounds. One is Jack Campbell, who I mentioned of Iowa. Again, for my money, I think he's the safest, most consistent linebacker in this draft. He's a guy I think could start for them tomorrow at a couple different spots and play alongside Milano and complement her with him as well and be a really good run defender. He's, you know, 240 plus the linebacker and can really finish inside the box. Noah Sewell of Oregon, kind of a lackluster last season or two after kind of a really good freshman year at Oregon, but still physical, athletic, powerful, can stack and shed at a high level. Can be a little bit too aggressive at times. That's kind of an area to clean up for the run game, but physically he can definitely handle being a run defender. And then a guy a lot of NFL teams like, but not seeing a lot of buzz on him in terms of the media, is Isaiah Moore of NC State, who I think had the highest run grade per PFF, really smart, effective leader, and I think he can be a long-term starter and a kind of a green dot guy for NFL teams, which I know the Bills don't quite need yet, but I think he's one of, if not the best true run defender in terms of instincts, stack and shed, finish on the ball carrier in this draft class. Those are three guys I'd say in the top two, three rounds the Bills could target.
Eric Gelko from Optimum Scouting, also player personnel for the, or director of football ops and player personnel for the Shrine Bowl on the Western Hotline. What about running back? It's not my favorite idea. In fact, it's probably my least favorite idea. But I wonder, we talk about Bijan Robinson, Eric. Is he the type of prospect where it would be almost amazing if he was on the clock for the Bills, or do you think the league has shifted enough to where even a running back that talented might make it that far?
You know, I'm kind of someone to zag the other way. I think the entire league has shifted way too much into this seemingly hatred of running back, right? We got guys like Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry who might get traded. Ezekiel Elliott getting cut. Running backs like Miles Sanders who have been 1,000-yard running backs struggling to get $7 million a year. I think teams have kind of collectively said, hey, we don't want to pay for running backs. And I think there's a team out there that can really zag a little bit and get a lot of this great collection of running back talent and be successful. And I'm a huge James Cook fan. I think he is an absolute stud. I think he could be a feature back. But if he's your number two, you're in a really good spot. And Naheem Hines, a really safe player. And adding a guy like Bijan Robinson, who's one of the top 10 talents in this draft class, I think most teams would agree with that, despite the position being devalued. Getting a guy like him in there, and you've got, I think, a running back room that can take a lot of pressure off in a lot of different ways. But beyond him, even guys like Zach Charbonnet are, again, plug-and-play NFL running backs. And it wasn't that long ago that the Browns took Nick Chubb in the early part of round two, and he's been a really important part of their offense this entire NFL career. And I think now teams, even people in the media and NFL teams, would say, do we take a running back in early round two? Is that too early? And I think teams are kind of going away from running back position a bit too much. Getting Bijan Robinson at 26 would be a slam dunk, in my opinion. Getting Zach Charbonnet in round two would be unbelievable value as well for how much these guys can impact their offense.
It's so amazing, Eric. Like, you would love it here. It's literally the great running back debate every year here in Buffalo the last few years. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it was Travis Etienne. Everybody was mocking him going to the Bills. And then last year, it was Breece Hall. This year, it's Bijan Robinson. We have debates, heated arguments, callers, social media on the value. It truly is remarkable how teams are viewing this. And my opinion is the way the Bills have operated under Brandon Bean, sure, they have used a second rounder and a couple third rounders going to Singletary and Moss for those guys, but they've never paid the running back either. So I don't think they want to spend true assets, especially when you have a guy like James Cook on the roster who he's only going to touch the ball, 15 times a game anyway, since you have Josh Allen.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I think we've seen some teams have a lot of success with these third, fourth round running backs, and sometimes second round running backs that have had success. I think the leap to saying a first round running back is a bad investment. I see that. I know the analytical piece of it too, but I think collectively we kind of underappreciate the value of having a running back who can get 4 yards to carry after contact, can work outside the backfield, can pass block at a high level. And I think a lot of successful teams have found good rookie running backs, but a lot of teams have tried that third, fourth round tactic, such as the Bills in some ways with Singletary and Moss not quite working out. You're kind of looking saying, hey, that position's still a weakness. So I think addressing a need for a position that plays 90% of snaps on offense sometimes for some teams, I think it's still a really valuable position. So again, if you told me Bijan's going to play 70% of your snaps, be an above average to high end starter at a position that's going to be really important in my offense, that sounds like a first round pick to me, despite what the contract analytics may say. So I think getting him at 26 would be a slam dunk. And talking with teams, there's a decent chance he's going to be there or very close to that spot. So again, I think that'd be a great fit alongside James Cook and have one of the best running back backfields in the league too. But the league as a collective has said, hey, running backs aren't as viable as we thought they once were.
He did kind of tip his hand to us last week, Brandon Bean, that is. He said they are looking maybe more for a bigger back. They did struggle in some short yardage last year. They don't want to put it all on Josh Allen. And he even said the guys we have are all like 200 pounds. All right, so let's take the clues there. Maybe go in the middle rounds, so late rounds. Is there a guy that fits that stature that can be more of a specialty back that could fit in?
Yeah, I mentioned Zach Charbonnet. I think he's become really undervalued. Again, he's a guy we think is a top 32, top 40 player in this entire draft. There's a decent chance, again, talking with teams, that he may be there in the late part of round two, which I think would be an awesome value. Eric Gray of Oklahoma, a little bigger back. Israel Akibane from Pittsburgh, a bigger back as well. Chris Rodriguez of Kentucky, more of a day three guy, who I think could be, you know, kind of fill that role specifically too, but not as many kind of bigger physical complete backs that are going to take over for what James Cook can already do. I think James Cook is talented enough to even do some red zone stuff. So if you're going to have a specialty back in there, I think it's either go on the top end, who's going to be kind of above James Cook, guys like Bijan or Charbonnet, or wait till late day three to have a guy just be a 5-6 carry a game guy. With how talented James Cook is, I think it'd be kind of malpractice to take someone else early just to be a power back and take away carries from a guy like James, who's super talented, unless that guy is really, really impressive like Bijan or Charbonnet.
Last one for me, Eric. If you were Carolina, like you specifically, who would you take at number one?
I don't think they'll agree with me, but I would take Bryce Young and not think twice.
Okay.
The size doesn't concern you all that much, or does it concern you, but you can get by it because he's mobile?
It does concern me. That's why I think for all these quarterbacks, I would take him first overall. I think trading that many assets and that many long-term assets for, you know, I think all these quarterbacks are not like the Trevor Lawrences or the guys that I feel really, really comfortable in saying, you know what, I'm positive. I am pretty darn sure Bryce Young's going to be a great quarterback. But again, that size concerns and those injuries. He loses two seasons of his five rookie seasons, and it's not, no longer a great investment either. So, but again, I knowing Bryce and people around him since he was at, you know, in high school and then Alabama, the people, the way they speak about him, the way he is, I've talked to Bryce as well too. It's pretty impressive. But that being said, I don't think Carolina's going to go that direction first overall.
And finally, Eric, I just want to touch on interior O-line real quick, because the Bills did sign Connor McGovern. We don't think necessarily now they're going to be targeting that area too early on. It seems like they feel good about what they have, but they do have Mitch Morse, who's had the concussions. McGovern comes as a free agent here, and maybe they want a guy that can do a few more things, get in the program, get young. Is there somebody early on, interior offensive line, whether they can play center, guard, and maybe a few different positions?
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of those guys get drafted in the mid part and late day two, early day three. A couple guys I've shout out that can play guard and center. Juice Scruggs of Penn State is a guy all NFL teams really, really like. I think he's really underrated in terms of the media side of things. He can play center tomorrow, guard tomorrow in the NFL. He's played both at Penn State. Jordan McFadden at Clemson has played tackle in college, played center at the combine. He could do center guard stuff as well. And then Antonio Mafi of UCLA, a 350-pound former D-tackle who can bend really, really well. He's going to test well at UCLA's next workout. And a guy teams like in the third, fourth round area. So those are three guys I'd say if you want to get an interior offensive lineman late day two, those are three guys I'd recommend.
Boy, if they had a center from Penn State, they already have Ryan Bates from Penn State at right guard. They got Connor McGovern, Penn State, at left guard. It could be an all Penn State interior offensive line at some point.
Don't overthink it. Juice Scruggs, third round pick. There you go.
Love it. Eric, thank you so much. Great insight. Let's catch up maybe before the draft if we can as well.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. That is Eric Yelko. Really good stuff from him. He changed your line of thinking on anything? He is high on James Cook.
I also am high on James Cook. Maybe not that high, but nope. I'm not too far away from him on Cook. I mean, I've said all along I want Cook to be the number one featured back, and Hines can be your pass-catching back. So I'm in on that. He's not talking me into Bijan Robinson. I'm gonna proclaim that now, even though Eric Elko, a more respected name in the industry when it comes to evaluating draft talent by far than I am, is telling me, oh, slam dunk, if you get him at 26, that'd be great. No, Nope, 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 no chance. Don't will not be talked into it by anybody. I don't care how smart they are.
I do want to point out, he kept saying 26th. They picked 27th. I wasn't going to correct him. It's not a big deal. And it's no, right. not even the 28-27 thing.
Right.
It's the 28th and then one forfeited. The Bills will pick 27th.
Yeah.
I didn't want to correct him. He kept saying 26th. That's okay. We all get the point.
Everything's mixed up because the Dolphins cheated.
Yes, I know. Yes, that's exactly right.
Brady cheated. He's the common denominator in all these cheating scandals. He's kind of loosely involved in all three. So three loosely involved cheating scandals equals one full-blown cheating scandal. Tom Brady.
Wherever he goes, there's a cheating scandal. Tom Brady. Has anything come out of Tampa? Any cheating with Tampa at all? I don't even hear any of that, right?
Unless you count him going to meet with the Dolphins
while he was with Tampa,
right? But otherwise,
this is like one of those deals where...
He knew the rules too, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of course he did.
This is one of those deals where it's like college, where you find out 3 or 4 years after the fact, and they go and say, hey, by the way, back 4 years ago, you guys cheated on your recruitment of this player, so now we have to strip a bunch of wins from you.
That's the stupidest thing ever.
That's what's going to happen.
Is that going to happen more because of NIL now, or is it going to happen less?
I think less.
It's going to happen less.
However, the NCAA, it's just you can't put the toothpaste back in the bottle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's already out. So what they're trying to do, because it's such a crazy mess, they're trying to find other ways to kind of penalize you and say, well, you're going too overboard. Even that's becoming a little weird.
Yeah.
But I think it's less. I think teams are now figuring out, hey, we can just kind of do this a little bit, like out in the open, basically.
More and more, the NCAA is losing power, so
100%.
They're not going to have the power to maybe do it anyway.
100% that is happening. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk more Bills, what's on the horizon with free agency set up the next couple of weeks, because now we're kind of transitioning from free agency to the draft, although free agency keeps going. We'll talk about that when we come back on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I'm a huge James Cook fan. I think he is an absolute stud. I think he could be a feature back, but if he's your number two, you're in a really good spot. Naheem Hines, a really safe player, and adding a guy like Bijan Robinson, who's one of the top 10 talents in this draft class. I think most teams would agree with that, despite the position being devalued. Getting a guy like him in there, and you've got, I think, a running back room that can take a lot of pressure off in a lot of different ways. But beyond him, even guys like Zach Charbonnet are, again, plug-and-play NFL running backs.
Eric Galco just joined us a little while ago. Check it on demand, WGR550.com, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. You can check it out on demand at WGR550.com and on the Odyssey app. As always, he said Naheem Hines is a safer back, a safe play or something like that. Do you agree? I don't know if he's safe.
Safer than...
Safe. He just said, I think it's like, yeah, you're okay with having Naheem Hines. You can just put him out there and he'll do his job.
Yeah, I think that's Naheem Hines.
Okay.
I mean, he graded out last year as, and this includes the Indianapolis time, he graded out as a well below average runner, but a well above average receiving back, and an above average pass blocker. Isn't that exactly what I thought Naheem Hines was?
Yeah.
And Cook, I don't want to push back all the way against he's this pass-catching back in the NFL, because in year one, he was a better runner than he was a receiver. I mean, there was miscommunications. Remember the Lions game where Allen almost threw an interception because he was trying to dump it off to Cook, and Cook was in the wrong spot? The linebacker just, like, dropped it. That game goes the Lions' way if you know, that linebacker hangs onto the football, and it was strictly a miscommunication between Allen and the running back, James Cook. And if we go back to college, he was talked about as this pass-catching running back, and the numbers, I mean, he had 67 catches in 4 years at Georgia. It's not like he was catching 50 balls a year, like he just unstoppable, this Alvin Kamara, Austin Eckler type running back at Georgia. Like, he caught 67 passes and he ran 230 times. Like, that's a pretty wide disparity. So, again, that's not me to say he can't be a pass-catching back in the NFL, but he was a horrible pass blocker. He was an incredible runner. I think I want that guy as my lead back, not my guy who's out there in obvious passing situations.
Let's go to the phone lines. Chuck in Hamburg. What's up, Chuck? How are you?
Not too bad, guys. Happy Monday.
Yep.
When it comes to, like, what we should be targeting, to me, I mean, I was at the playoff game. You know, I watched our quarterback run for his life the majority of the time, and I don't understand why offensive line is not really more of a thing, because you have Morse who, I mean, I don't know how much longer he's going to play, and it still upsets me that we took Boogie Basham when we could have had Creed Humphrey. You know, like, you got to start thinking long term. Are you comfortable with Spencer Brown? Because I'm not. He looked awful last year. And Bates, I think, is average. So you have the whole side that's just, I don't really see much on the O-line.
It's always a great debate here. Like, Mitch Morse is a good player. He was their best offensive lineman last year. I mean, I have no problem with Mitch Morse. I agree you have to think long-term. If you're going to invest a first-round pick, to me, that guy's got to help you almost right away, and I don't know if you have that ability right now to do that. You know, I mean, unless you have him fight for the job and beat out Bates, I don't know. Is there really a lineman that's going to come in here right away and beat out Ryan Bates? I don't know if I see that happening, to be honest with you.
I think you have this $250 million asset. Again, I saw him run for his life last year, and everything starts there. You know, we always talk about things are won in the trenches, and I think we're very average when it comes to running the football. And then we talk about drafting a running back.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I don't disagree with you, Chuck, about, like, I think they have to improve there, and I think the addition of Connor McGovern is their way of saying, we know we had issues with pass protection, and like you say, Chuck, Josh running for his life, even Brandon, was it Brandon or Sean? I think it was Sean who said Josh just too early had pressure on him, and I think signing a guy who grades out very, very well in pass protection, even versus running, is maybe an indication of what, Chuck, you're saying. They're just not addressing it particularly with the younger guys.
Yeah. And the only way I see any scenario in which a lineman in the draft is starting day one is if they did something that I don't think anybody thinks is going to happen, which would be releasing Mitch Morse.
That's right.
If they want to save $6 million by cutting Mitch Morse and make Ryan Bates a center, which he can do, and put someone at guard, okay. But if I'm doing, what do I need $6 million for right now?
Well, it's not
receiver, because I'd rather just draft the receiver in round one than rather get the guard.
Here's the other issue that I have with that.
And you're getting a lot worse.
I think oftentimes many fans are way too enamored with cap space versus good players.
Right.
Mitch Morse is a good player. He's good.
No, he's a great player.
I mean, like, he's solid. Now, is he perfect? No. I do think he gets beaten sometimes with bigger defensive tackles and nose tackles he has to face. But Mitch Morse is a good center in this league, and he's not super old. He just turned 30 years old, by the way, I believe it is. Like, yep. I would rather have Mitch Morse than $6 million in cap space. Maybe he can restructure something. I don't want Mitch Morse not on the team. Because if you take Mitch Morse off and you put Ryan Bates there, now you have a lesser center and you have to replace the guard.
Right. I'm not sure also I kind of took the conversation in that direction. I'm not sure the caller was trying to.
No,
100%.
I get it.
Because he was talking more about, like, the future.
Yes.
And this is where, like, as you mentioned, Morse is your best center and you don't want to move on from that. Next year, who knows? He'll be 32. He's got a long concussion history, and it'll be different. You can save more than $8 million, almost $9 million on the cap as opposed to six. That's a little bit different, and maybe they're in a different position. And I think the caller is almost implying there, why don't we draft a guy and have him develop behind Morse and Bates, and then in a year you can take that Morse money? But that's a situation where your first-round pick does not contribute to you on the field.
And I think everybody complain about that this year. In fact, CJ, I think, wants to talk about contributing early. Go ahead, CJ.
Hey, you kind of got me when you were talking to the guy about the tight end and not getting a tight end so early because it takes a while to get them.
Generally the case. It's the position where people point to that takes a little longer than most.
Right, and I understand that. So you also ended that with saying in the Super Bowl window.
Yep.
So right. And it makes me think to get the most in your investment on players that you get as a GM, no matter how many players we get, you want to get the best out of what you have now because you're paying so much to your top guys. And if you want to get the most out of your investment, doesn't that have a lot to do with the OC? And this has nothing to do with like how Ken Dorsey did, but there's no proof or anything behind them. So with the window that we're in, why wouldn't you go for somebody that's proven? And I love that they go after our guys, but you want somebody that's proven because we always look and say we didn't do a screen. We didn't use Hines the right way. Shakir looked flashy when he played. If you knew how to use those guys with somebody that was proven, you would get the most sort of return in your investment than what you have on waiting for Ken Dorsey to be the Ken Dorsey that he's going to be in the future.
What's your idea? What about proven? Are you suggesting going out and getting a free agent?
No. I'm just like, it's still milk now. It's water under the bridge. Like, I love Ken Dorsey now. I'm just saying, in general, as a GM, on your idea of getting a rookie OC in a Super Bowl window, why would you go
the OC? I'm sorry, I thought you meant players. Yes. Okay, well, CJ, we've gone through this. Here. The bottom line and the answer is because he had already been there, they felt they didn't want to change the system very much at all. And Josh Allen was a big endorser of Ken Dorsey. Don't ever lose sight of that.
Right. But I just, that's the same. Like I told you before, you save, you protect your players from themselves. And also, your goal is to win it all. That's all I'm saying.
I know.
I agree with you, yes. And I like Ken Dorsey a lot. It's just the window that we're in and we all want to win now. And I just, maybe I'm still hurt from the Bengals game and him getting out coached because he was a rookie. But I'll hang up and let you talk.
Yeah, no problem. Well, guess what? The many, many year veteran defensive coordinator also got out coached that game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Leslie Frazier didn't have his best day against the Bengals. Ken Dorsey didn't have his best day against the Bengals. Now, nobody really did have their best day against the Bengals. It's an argument that is fair, I think, CJ. I don't think you're unfair by saying it and people bring up, and it's a criticism that we've heard. And I think it fits, right? Which is, hey, you got a first-year offensive coordinator with this great quarterback and team that just lost a really good offensive coordinator, great offensive coordinator, to a head coaching job. And you're going basically got to learn on the job type of thing. And I think that is a fair criticism. But I think they felt comfortable going back to, he had been here for a few years. He had been in the NFL as a coach for a few years. Maybe he didn't have the play calling experience, but he coached under Daboll. They didn't want to change the system. Josh Allen really liked him. They were comfortable with that. Is there room to criticize? Sure. And I'll also go back to, as much as it did not look right, I will agree with you. They did average more points a game this year than they did last year.
Yep.
By very small, but they did.
The bar
is so high.
It's so high, right? Like, okay, so from week 9 on, the Jet game. So Allen hurts his elbow in the Jet game. I'll include the Jet game because they scored, 20 points? And they really didn't look right offensively that whole game. That's 9 weeks. The Bills in the first 8 weeks of the season were number 2 in the league in offense. From week 9 on, that Jet game on, Allen's elbow injury, every one of those games except that first Jet game, they were 6th in the league in offense.
So there might be something to be said for Ken Dorsey knows what he's doing, but maybe when teams start to figure out what he's doing, he has to do a better job to adjust, and that's maybe what has to come along with his growth as an OC.
And even that point, 2nd in the first half, 6th in offense in the second half. 6th. I mean, that is...
Second half of the season, you mean?
They were 6th in total offense when we were all complaining about how it looked harder and how they didn't look right. Now, to be fair, the Bills finishing 6th in offense, this is how high the bar is. 6th is a disappointment.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you would not sign on the dotted line for the Bills being 6th in offense this coming season.
I agree with that.
You would want them to be top 3, I think, is the bar. So, that's where... Everything needs to be put in perspective a little bit. We're talking about them being one of the best offenses in football, one of the best 3, as opposed to one of the best 10. And could that coordinator experience be the difference between 2nd and 6th? Because it could. Maybe someone's done this work out there. There's probably some study out there that someone has done, or maybe will do, where you compare the offensive coordinator's first season to their second season. Because without, again, knowing what the numbers look like, without doing the homework, I'd imagine that offenses do get better in the second year of an offensive coordinator.
803-0550, if you want to jump on board, we can do that. But we're going to be running out of time here shortly because we're going to take a timeout and come back and wrap up your Monday here on the Extra Point Show.
All right, breaking news. The Bills have made a signing, and it is a wide receiver. Who had it first? It was the Bills. The Bills officially announced they have signed wide receiver Trent Sherfield to a one-year contract. We don't have any types of details on the money, but this is a player actually that our buddy Tyler Dunn wrote about at golongtd.com a couple months ago.
I love getting this news like right before we go off the air, after we go off the air.
Sherfield is a Yak guy. In fact, I think he is the guy that caught that touchdown against the 49ers for the Dolphins on like the opening play. Remember he took it for 75 yards?
Do you want to guess his size?
5'10"?
He's 6'1".
Oh, he's bigger than I thought.
I was really stunned when I looked at his size. 6'1", 219.
Yeah. So 417 yards, 2 touchdowns for the Dolphins last year. He actually really took over as their number three. Remember they signed Cedric Wilson, and they were planning on Cedric Wilson being their number three, but he was hurt all year. Sherfield ended up being that guy. That's another receiver added to the mix in an interesting level of player. He was good last year, but kind of like Deonte Hardy, he's not done enough in his career to make you think, oh yeah, this is a starter. Or also, I would have to see the money. I wonder how likely he is to actually make the team. Because on the surface, I think, oh, this guy's on the team.
I'll look up
special team stats too.
No, I agree with you, but yeah, I mean, there's one thing that I think is becoming apparent here, and Brandon Bean gave a clue to this, and now it's happening. They are really kind of going more all in on the Yak stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you bring in Hardy, you bring in Sherfield. Now, he said
4.8 yards after catch per reception last year.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon Bean said at one of the times he spoke to the media, he mentioned yards after catch. This was something we talked about a lot last year.
Yeah.
But they never specifically got to, it seemed like.
Here's another thing that Trent Sherfield could be. He could be your Jake Kumerow replacement. Because special teams, snap percentage by year, 40%, 43%, 53%, 44%, and then his rookie year, 22%. He is a big special teams guy. He's played over 175 special team snaps every one of the last 4 years. So this could be your Kumerow replacement of a guy that can play on offense, but maybe also a core special teamer.
He is not a kick and punt return guy.
And he's not those special team snaps are like,
right.
I don't know exactly what he's doing, but he's not returning.
Well, again, he's 6'1", 220. I mean, that's
right.
That's right. I mean, you're not signing another 5'6", 5'7" guy as they did in Deonte Hardy. Nothing against 5'6" or 5'7" people out there, but you know the running thing was all they're infatuated with these small receivers.
Right.
He is not a small receiver. He is a bigger receiver at 6'1", 220. But this is an interesting signing. This is a guy that has made some plays in this league, but he's never really stuck around. Arizona for 3 years, San Francisco for a year, Miami for a year last year. So Trent Sherfield, now a Buffalo Bill, signs a one-year deal. His last team was the Miami Dolphins. We're going to have something on our website at that, WGR550.com. All right, that carries us through the day.
Yeah.
We got that. And I'll update my roster at Sal Sports on Twitter. Joe and I will be back tomorrow. Sabres Live is up next. One Bills Live comes your way at 1 o'clock, and they'll have a lot more on the Trent Sherfield signing.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And Watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.